And as time goes by, I'm trying to do more and more. I'm also doing it with my daughter because now we're just doing, oh my God, we're just doing math with multiplication because she's currently doing multiplication in third grade. And I love it. It's amazing. So a lot of times I see opportunities or something happens and then we're like, oh, this will be a great opportunity for MathPlay. So to go back to your question, after seeing how positive it was with my daughter, I could have helped.
Ever wonder how to transform math class into every student's favorite subject? Join us in this episode as we dive into the world of math play with Libo Valencia, a passionate high school math teacher from New York and author who believes in shaping the future of mathematics through engaging and playful teaching strategies.
Explore the transformative power of math play with Libo, where we unravel how this approach can instill a lasting love for mathematics in every student. Discover why math class should be a highlight for every student and every person, and learn practical ways to infuse elements of math play in both elementary and high school math classrooms. Your journey to creating a math class that students love starts here. So put your phone in your pocket, your earbuds in your ears, and let's ignite the joy of mathematics in every classroom.
Let's go!
Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective math program, the impact that you are going to be doing will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you're going to get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or the educators that you serve.
All right, let's jump into this episode with Libo.
Hey, hey there, Libo. It is awesome to have you finally here on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. It's great to see your face again. Some of you are wondering, what is he talking about? For those who are a part of the virtual summit back in November 2023, fifth virtual summit, Libo, you were a big part of that summit doing a presentation. But before we dig in and go down memory lane here, tell us, how's things been going in your world and where are you coming to us from today?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I feel so honored to be with you guys tonight. I feel extremely honored. I've heard some of the conversations that you had. I was very honored to present on the summit alongside with like super mega rock stars and learn from everybody. So thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very
no
happy.
Problem.
I'm very excited to be here tonight. Right now I am in Brewster, New York, and it is cold. We just had a snow day the other day. Might have an early dismissal tomorrow or something. So it is cold right now. But 2024 is thrilling as well. Thank God everyone's healthy. Everyone's good at home. So we cannot complain.
Love it. Love it. And it has been a cold snap here too in Southern Ontario. So we feel for you for sure. Libo, we've met. Kyle said we had you on the summit. But for all our listeners, we have given you a great intro in the episode, but we want to hear from you. So do us a favor, being from Brewster, New York, fill us in on your teaching role, your role in education. What are you currently kind of working on?
So I currently work as a high school teacher. I teach secondary mathematics in New York. I have been teaching for the past 16 years at the high school level. After I finished my first master's in pure mathematics, I had the opportunity to teach at the college level. So I took it. It was one of those things. As I was working on my degree, I felt like, you know what? As I'm closer to retirement, one day I will get to work at the college level. But opportunity presented itself and I started working at the college. I've been doing the college for the past 7-8 years and I love it. I enjoy it. It is a different kind of setting. I really enjoy working with teenagers and like helping high school kids and whatnot. But the college is also something that I feel like I could do as well. I enjoy it as like two different worlds. And now I have two daughters at home, 4-year-old and 9-year-old. And now I'm exploring this side of me of an unofficial elementary school teacher. So I'm doing everything. I'm doing elementary, high school, and college.
Isn't that how it goes? That's exactly how it goes, right? You go into the field of where your kids are.
Well, you know what? I can definitely relate, not only from having the children. John and I both were in the high school math classroom. I had done some teacher courses as well, so kind of have that working with the older educators, or the older students, we'll call it. And then also, when I went into my role as a K-12 math consultant, it really taught me a ton about those K to six, but really K-8 grade levels, which there is so much wonderful, wonderful stuff going on that I just had no idea about. And I'm sure we're going to dig into that here today through your math play and so many things there. But before we do, we don't want to forget, we've got one question that we ask every single person who comes on this podcast, and that is...
He's ready. I can see it.
Yes. To share your math moment. So my friend, when you think about mathematics, math class, what moment pops into your mind? We'd love to hear about it.
So there is actually, oh my God, there's actually one thing that pops into my mind, not only right now, but a lot of times when I'm like talking about math. And that is, I was born and raised in Colombia. So for the first 15 years of my life, I live in Colombia, speaking only Spanish. And then my family, like, we moved to the States. And back then, Jonica, I spoke like no English whatsoever. And I started at White Plains High School in New York. And as a newcomer, as an immigrant, you start taking like classes where you're learning English. So a lot of the classes were like, called back then, like ESL classes. But my math classes were like regular classes, or classes where like people spoke English from the beginning. And it was so magical.
They're like, he'll be fine. There's just numbers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you don't need to worry about that. I mean, I know there's some other words in there that, it'll be fine. It'll be fine, right?
Exactly. And to me, like, that was so beautiful because I did well overall in all the classes. But even though I didn't speak the language, I felt like a fish in water. Once again, I always felt like math was my like safe place. I was 15 years old. I was moving to a new, different country. A lot of things were going on. When I was in that math class, I didn't understand what people were saying, right? But I understood the math. I knew what they were doing. I knew where they were going. So it was in that class that I knew that, oh my God, mathematics is so universal. I could go to another planet, and if they're doing math, I'll sit down and like do the math with them. So to me, having that experience of somebody coming from a different country, not knowing the language, but being okay and being comfortable with that in that math class was really, really eye-opening. It also like opened opportunities because I felt that in that class, even though I didn't speak the language, it was easier for me to learn it because I felt like I understood the math. There was this level of comfort. So I was kind of relearning it in English. It was amazing.
Love it.
So
love
that time, yeah.
Yeah, I find that fascinating. In most part, because I think of the contrast. I think math class, we've heard so many math moments on the podcast. I think this is going to be episode 277, right? So we've heard 276 math moments over the last 5-6 years. So most math moments are always how math class has alienated someone. This is not for me. This is the, I don't see myself here. Or you get that sense that it's something that's like pushes back on you and it doesn't make you feel safe. It doesn't make you feel welcomed in that class. Like we've heard a lot of those. And yours is the opposite, right? Like you being not having learned English going into that, it's like, it's a joiner. It's like that, like you said, a universal subject brought you closer, you know, it brought you into that world. And I think that's a fascinating story and I love it. I'm curious, Lebo, like we always ask this follow-up as well, is that stuck with you? You've obviously seen that as that joining safe experience. How does that influence the work that you're doing with students? How does that influence what you're doing in the classroom?
So back in Colombia, I was a good student. Here, I was a good student. I was able to pick up English quickly and then got a full scholarship to like attend Lehman College. And everything, it was kind of like interesting because like when I became a teacher, I went back to White Plains High School and taught for a couple of years. When I finished my master's, I went back to Lehman College and I'm still teaching at Lehman College part-time. So I feel that I was able to like go back and give in a little bit. So like to answer your question, to me, the how like it has influenced my work with students and now with my daughters is like, in my mind, there is no reason why math shouldn't be like everyone's favorite class. to me, like, math class should be everyone's favorite class. There are so many things. And I feel that this social, like, thing, phobia of mathematics that is so common and is, like, so socially accepted is because of probably the way that it's taught, that because it hasn't, like, changed over, like, you know, many, many, many years. And I do feel that, like, even when I learned it, right, a lot of times I felt in math class, even though I felt like a strong student, I experienced some level of success, I didn't always enjoy math class. Right. To some extent, it was always like, okay, we're going to do this. You could always like sort of like predict and like knew exactly what was going to happen, which is not a negative thing. But I feel like there's so much more to mathematics that we don't take advantage of. I see it more with my daughters who are now like in pre-K and third grade, that they get to play more. They get to do more things. And like their experience, I did it, like, because my experience at the elementary level was in Colombia, it's 100% different than what my daughter are experiencing right now. So to me, like, that's beautiful. I'm like learning with them. I'm like, okay, like, let's do it like this. So to me, it's like a math class should be a class where we get to explore things. There we would make connection to other subjects. And the math conversation should not be limited to just like our classroom.
I love it. And you were talking about how you feel that math class, like, why isn't it every kid's favorite subject area? And your energy, hearing you talk, seeing your session back in the summit, and for those who haven't seen Lebo's session, you can check it out inside the academy. In the outro, in the bumper, I think we're going to give away a coupon code for those who may have missed it. We'll get you into that academy so you can hop in there and check out some of those 2023 virtual summit sessions. But Lebo, when I hear your energy, your passion, I find it hard to believe that you aren't drawing some of those kids in to see some of that beauty. So bravo and good on you for that. And I think this is a really great opportunity for us to kind of dig into some of the work that we know you for. I've never been in your math classroom. I've never been in your college class. I've never seen you working with your daughters, but I've seen some of your work around math play. And I'm wondering, can you help us understand the idea? And really what I'm curious about here is I'm going to guess that somewhere along the line, you've probably recognized that not every student has the experience or has had the experience that you had, right? I'm going to guess that you've had those classrooms and you could probably, like, all of us can think of those students, probably many students who enter into the classroom and, you know, they, oh, you know what, Mr. Pierce, I'm not a math person. Like, just don't call on me. They give you the warning, that sort of thing. And meanwhile, you're going, no, this isn't how it's going to be. So I'm curious, did the idea of math play come along when your daughters were born? Or was this something that you were already thinking about and implementing in your high school classroom? I'm really curious. And then we want to take a deep dive into, like, what is it? What does that look like and sound like for you?
So I feel that I've been, like, very, very lucky, very blessed in a way during the first, and I'm going to say this, and some teachers in the audience are going to say, like, what is he talking about? So I feel like for the first 5 years of my career, I taught new classes every year. And my supervisor at the time, in my mind, people, I was like, oh my God, I get to teach algebra. Oh my God, I'm going to teach geometry. I'm going to teach algebra too. And I was so happy. Well, like, some of my coworkers at the time were like, what are you talking about? Like, that's a new prep. But, like, I was young and I was like, you're going to run out of classes before I run out of years. And like, that was so powerful later on, because, like, very early I got to experience algebra, geometry, algebra 2, trigonometry, pre-calc and calc. So in a way that really prepared, I don't know, but it prepared me to, like, okay, like, I know what students are supposed to be coming in with and leaving with going into this class. Not only that, but I also had the opportunity to teach what you would consider, like, the honors level or the advanced level, the AP level, the standard level, and the remedial level, right? Or the essential level. So in a way, I got to work with students that were like little Lebos, right? Ready to go, everything done. I get it. I'm ready for the next thing. And students that, oh my God, this was, yeah, I don't want to do this. I'm not a math person. And so it was like this thing. So back, like, early in my career, my goal was to, you know, make them fall in love with math. So I will do applications and I will do different things, try to bring in technology. I became so, like, any technology that I saw out there that I could use and implement that will engage my students, I will try to use, not just, like, because it's fancy, but okay, like, this serves a purpose. It gives me, for example, immediate feedback. So I'm not able to provide immediate feedback for 20 students, but if we're using this software, this program, the program might be able to do it. So yes, I'm going to do it. And a lot of times we don't have all the answers, but I found over the years that students are the best tech support you could have. So to go back to your question, I always wanted to like make it a fun experience. So I will try to implement different things. But again, this was at the secondary level and the college level. And a lot of the curriculum, right? I think it's the same in Canada, is like predetermined. So the state of New York, for the most part, will say, like, okay, these are the things that they have to cover. And then at the end of the school year, they're going to take a state assessment called the Regents Exam. And even if you're in a school where it doesn't take the state assessment, there are different things, right? I cannot just show up and say, I'm going to teach whatever I want. You're kind of like bounded and constrained by some things. So it did really start with my older daughter. So I have two daughters, Mariana and Madeline. My older daughter, she makes it seem so easy. She makes it seem like parenting is so easy. That's how we got triggered into having a second one. And then the second one, like, listens to nobody. So my older daughter, when she was young, I couldn't wait to start. Like, you can imagine, right? I couldn't wait to start, like, teaching her. And this was, like, before, like, she was, like, probably, like, 3 or 2. We started, like, counting things and, like, I was showing her numbers. I was so obsessed. And we started doing this math play. So I would say, Mariana, let's do some math play. And we will, like, explore, like, numbers and shapes and different things to the point that my daughter will ask me, like, are we going to play or are we going to do math play? Because like play was usually outside with her toys. Well, math play was like in our basement and we got to explore. So it really did start with my daughter. And like, see, now I had a lot of freedom because it was in our basement. I have all the math toys that you can imagine. We have them in our basement. So I had all kinds of toys and I didn't have a curriculum. I didn't have something to follow. I could spend hours playing with her and it was so fun. And I saw that what I started to notice was that my daughter was like super engaged and we were like play together. And I always pretended I didn't know a lot of things that I do know. Just to make it fun, to show her that it's okay in mathematics not to know. And at the beginning, she was like, no, like reluctant, like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't understand it. But it became a process where like she became comfortable. And through play, through math play, she learned so much that I think she would have normally learned, like if I was following the like predetermined curriculum, it was through math play and also developed. It gave her like this stamina to like stay with problems and to have this confidence that even if I don't know something at the beginning, I'm going to be able to figure it out.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I'm curious because it's like math play, you've written a whole book on this and math play started with our kids. And I think that happens for a lot of us who are very involved in trying to make sure our kids have that really positive connection to mathematics in school. And you've clearly done that. How is what you've learned with your daughter and what was engaging her? How did that transfer into the classroom?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here, and I've got just a quick message specifically for our district-level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district-level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Oh my goodness. So the crazy thing is like, this was like right before COVID or during COVID because my daughter is 9 and then it was like, she was starting to do math. So I feel that the results that I saw, she was always engaged. She was learning. She was doing things that she was going to learn in like first grade in kindergarten. So I was like so happy and excited. So I started like, couldn't help but think like, oh my God, will this approach work with my high school students? And then like, of course I got nervous, right? I'm like, oh my God, no, let's leave it the way it is. It's working. I was working at the time in a new district where I was not tenured. So I was tenured in the district where I was. Then I came to a new district. So I'm like, oh my God, no, maybe I shouldn't do this. But I felt sort of like a responsibility. I'm like, this has been so effective with my daughter. Why wouldn't I try with my students? And it's like that kind of thing that when I was trying to go to sleep at night, I was like, oh my God, I need to try this. And if it fails, then it fails. Then I'm going to be able to go to sleep because I tried it. It didn't work. it's okay. But like, I couldn't let it go. And I was like, oh my God, like I need to try. What if it works? And then of course I was in the back of my mind, I could hear some of my colleagues saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If what you're doing is working, don't try something new. But I decided to try it. And I decided at the time I was teaching like algebra, geometry, algebra 2, pre-calc and calc. So I decided to try with geometry. I was like, I've been teaching geometry for a long time. I got it. Like, I think this is the place to start. And I started like my first math play lessons with my geometry students, where I remember like the first activity, like vividly, we were doing like right triangles. And I asked them to take a picture of a right triangle around their house or around the school, come back, show me that picture, and then prove or disprove that it's actually a right triangle using a method of their choice. Now, it sounds overwhelming, and I was so nervous that they were going to leave and not come back or come back and say, oh, I couldn't find anything. But they came back, and they were like, they were eager to show the picture. They were like, oh, look what I found. This looks like a right triangle. I think that this might be it. And then they're like, Mr. Blunt said, so how do we prove it? I said, like, do however you want. So it was so beautiful because it was so organic. Some of them used the Pythagorean theorem. Some of them used like, because I had them upload that picture to GeoGebra so they could like play with it and see it on a grid and whatnot. So some of them started using like slope. Some of them measured the angle. So it was so beautiful that method like could actually work. So at the beginning, I didn't attach any grades to it. I made it like an exploration type of thing to see how it would go. But because I saw that the students liked it and they bought into it, I started doing more things to the point like where now I try to do like at least one math play activity per unit of study. And as time goes by, like, I'm trying to do more and more. I'm also doing it with my daughter because now we're just doing math play with multiplication because she's currently doing multiplication in third grade. And I love it. It's amazing. So a lot of times I see opportunities or something happens and then we're like, oh, this will be a great opportunity for math play. So to go back to your question, after seeing how positive it was with my daughter, I couldn't help think like, oh my God, I need to try this with my students. So I tried it with my geometry students. Then I tried it with my pre-cal students. I tried it with my calc students and experiencing similar results. Now, it wasn't always like an entire lesson. A math play activity could be your do now, your activation. It could be your consolidation. It could be part of the exploration. It could be a way for you to review. So there are different components and I use them in different classes for different purposes, like with my honor students or with my standard level students. But there's like more than enough room at the secondary level for us to do math play.
I love it. I love it. And what I think it comes down to is that there's kids, you have young kids, and it's working for them. And then you know what's going to happen to your young kids? They're going to grow up, but they're still just kids, right? And I think at the end of the day, sometimes, especially in high school, I find this, or maybe even in the middle grades, where all of a sudden it's like everyone's trying to prove that they're no longer kids. It's like this big rush to stop being a kid that you might get maybe some initial pushback. But I think when you hit the elements of what play really is, it's explorative, it's inquiry, it's investigating, it's just playing, it's just playing. And when we do those things, and I think one of the pieces that I'm sure takes time for people to work into, what does it look like in my context, in my grade level, with my students, with my curriculum, with my whatever it is? The reality is that when we give people, not just kids, but people in general, the opportunity to grapple, to think, to play, to tinker, to wonder. We do something at Math Moments we do a lot is this idea of notice and wonder, that protocol. And that's really just a segue into giving people the opportunity to be curious, to explore, and to just ultimately play. So I'm wondering, for those who are listening, what advice might you give to some educators who are thinking to themselves and they're thinking, you know, I mean, this idea, it's not like we're just going to snap our fingers and then my entire lesson is going to suddenly be this playground, right? I don't think that's the goal or the intention here. But I'm guessing that some people are thinking, it's like, I wonder, what would be my first step to try to just add a little bit of that play element to what I do in my math class? What might I do or where might I start?
I want to add to that, Kyle. I want to think about, like, when I think about first step, maybe there's like elements that we should look for when we're trying to design our lessons, or we want this first step of math play to happen on a classroom. Is there like, what do you use as a guide or kind of like a framework? Or maybe it's just like things you look for to be like, that's exactly what we need. Are there things that separate regular activities versus math play activities? Like, how do we get started?
So there's two things that come to mind. Number one is I feel that you're going to be more successful and feel more comfortable if you try like a math play activity with a class that you've taught in the past. So if you're like in a class that you're comfortable, okay, I already taught this class for like whatever, you know, a couple of years, a few years. I'm comfortable with the curriculum, with the pace. I'm comfortable with the material. Also, not attaching a grade or like make it like, oh my God, this is going to be a big portion of your test. It's going to be like a test grade, because then it defeats the purpose, because then the kids are thinking, or the students are going to be thinking, oh, well, no, this has to be perfect because Mr. Valencia is going to go over or is going to grade it. So I feel that one key component for a successful math activity is that students must have some level of choice in how they demonstrate mastery of what we're doing. So like a good place to start would be like a review. Let's say that you want to run a review session for like an upcoming test. That could be a great opportunity for like doing a math play activity. A math play activity could be like finding a real world application. So like for in a geometry class, I have students go to the cafeteria, walk around the school and find a parallelogram and then prove that it's a parallelogram. Make a video where you explain that it's actually a parallelogram. Because let's face it, with the technology that we have nowadays, pretty much like any question or like almost any question that we give students where they have to, that is computational, students can do like this or like somebody can do for them. But what I found is like if there is a level of they're going to do something, right? This is my product. Like I'm putting this together. I'm going to make this video explaining like this application or this property of like whatever it is. It's helpful. Also, another thing that comes to mind is when I went to school, I use a lot of worksheets, right? And repetition. I remember back in Colombia when I was in eighth grade learning like factorization, I will do hundreds and hundreds of factorization problems because I wanted to feel like, oh my God, I've done so many questions that there's no way my teacher is going to surprise me. But like nowadays with the technology at our fingertips, tools like GeoGebra, Desmos, like Mathagon, a lot of this practice, right, can be done through like one of those applets. I remember in one of my pre-calc classes, we were doing polar coordinates. And when I was a student, we then had a worksheet because we're going from moving in a rectangle, X and Y. Now we're doing R and theta. So that we got to figure out the radius and we got to figure out, right, the angle of elevation. And then what we had students do was like, I found this applet in GeoGebra where students can play a game of battleship in polar coordinates. And guys, I've never seen that level of engagement. I pair up the students. So instead of them like using a worksheet, they were playing a game and they were trying to like hit each other. You play battleship using polar coordinates. And the students didn't want to stop doing the work. They didn't want to stop playing. Another example that comes to mind is within our unit of conic sections, where students learn about circles and ellipses and parabolas and hyperbolas and you name it. We did one of the math play things that we did was a math art project. And this can be so powerful because it's based on students' interests. I'm going to say like, Kyle, do whatever you want. Do something that is related to your favorite book, to your favorite movie, to your favorite character. And sometimes I hear, like, I get the sense that some people might think, like, oh, math play is cute, but it might not be mathematically rigorous. Or, well, like, if we have time, we'll do that. I had students that wrote over 100 equations when they were doing their math art project, not because it was required, because I only required them to use at least one type of function. So they could have done 8 or 10, but they wanted to do 100 because it becomes meaningful. It feels like, oh my God, like I owe this. This is my project. I want to do a picture of SpongeBob and I want it to be perfect for Mr. Valencia. So things like that where they have, and so I feel like, to answer your question, a class that you've taught in the past, class that you're comfortable doing, and giving students some level of choice.
Love it. Choice is so important. And I think that first part where you said, like, we have to be comfortable in our class. We have to be comfortable with our curriculum before we can dabble in this kind of math play land. We've talked about that here on the podcast a lot about that comfort of the content, comfort of what you said. You were in a very unique situation, which I think probably led you into being in a great position to engage kids in these activities because you taught every subject, because you taught every level. And I think both Kyle and I, we were in schools that allowed for that too. And we taught every class from the lowest to the highest of different levels, different. And I think, so you're right, like we have to have that comfort level before we can start to experiment to go, what is working? Because we know that we can. I think a lot of teachers will say, I have to cover the curriculum. I have to get through it all. And if you don't, and it's the first time you're teaching that course, the second time, you're not sure where you can give and take, right? You don't have that comfort where you can go like, I can insert this math play problem here and here and here, and that I'm still going to be able to make sure that kids are getting what they need and how they need it. So if you think about, if we do these things, if we are engaging our students in this way and we are implementing the math play techniques that you're talking about, and we do this well, let's say we do this well and we do this consistently, where do you see the state of mathematics in the future?
I see it, to be honest. I get to write, I teach over the past like probably 6 years, I've been teaching at least like one class of, or two classes of juniors, 11 graders, applying to college next year. So I get to write a lot of college red letters for my students. And a lot of times, so what I do, one of the things that I do is I give them a form to do over the summer that they fill out. And I say, you know, I say like, really like what's one thing that you're proud of? It doesn't have to be math related or, you know, in my class. What's one thing that you did in my class that, you know, like things like that, just to get more input. And a lot of times students remember, oh, I remember when we built the Pringle circle and then we had to write the equation of best fit for it. And instead of using a circle, I used an ellipse and it was like a perfect fit. And they feel so accomplished. And you can almost see through like what they're writing that they remember. They don't remember like Mr. Valencia, right? But they remember how they felt in that lesson because it was meaningful. Or they might, even in their college essays, they might say like, oh, like I'm really proud of this math art project. One thing that the first time that we did the math art projects, somebody from the Mathematical Association of America saw it on Twitter, now X, and they reach out. They're like, oh my God, this is so cool. We would love for you to like write something about it. Like, how'd you go about it? And some of that work got to be displayed for the Mathematical Association of America. My students were like sharing that stuff on like on their social media. Now, if they're sharing about math in their social media, we're doing the right thing. Because like that's their world. So I feel that if we continue to do this, not only like one of the main goals of my book Math Play is for every like math, there's a place in mathematics for everybody. And it's not this scary thing that you get it or you don't get it. And we go, you know, we're like horses like going like this and you don't get it. There's only one path and there's only the few, the chosen ones that know the path. No, that like that's not the case. It might be like a different path, but there's a little bit for everybody in mathematics. So I feel that if we continue to do this, students in society in general are not going to see mathematics as this thing that it's okay for me not to be good at math. I feel like every math teacher in the world can relate to like, at some point had a conversation where you share, like even at the doctor's office, right? And when you share like, oh, Mr. Valencia, what do you do for a living? I'm a math teacher. I hated math. I couldn't do math. I did that every single time. You could be doing grocery shopping at the line and I could be wearing like one of my Mathplay shirts and people are going to be like, oh my God, you like math? They're like surprised. You like math? You teach math?
You reminded me, we would go to conferences. John's been on some of these ones, but some of my staff at my former district was, we would go away to conferences and we'd be in Ubers and we would ask the Uber driver their opinion of math. And it was always negative. They were always ripping it. But sorry, I jumped in there and I meant to hold back, but I couldn't.
No, because that is the case. And it's like acceptable. Like it's okay for kids. And one of the things that I think I wrote about this on the book is that I feel that a lot of teachers pass their math phobia and like their math fears to their students. And a lot of parents do the same thing because I see it like within my family, right? I'm the only math teacher in my family. Like I see it and I'm like, oh no, don't say like, I almost like go like this when I hear like, for example, like a cousin, like talking to like their kid saying like, oh my God, I can't believe they gave you this much homework, or like, why are they doing it like this? Because now like all these feelings go straight into the kid's head and like, oh, math is this thing that I'm not supposed to like, I'm not supposed to be good at it. And so I feel that with math play, it could be a starting point for us to like change that, to show people that you could play with math. It's fun to be good with math. And there's other things that you could do beyond the classroom that are relevant to mathematics. It's not just this thing. I always like tell people that it's not this thing that this is how we teach it, right? There's one path. You get it up. You don't get it. Too bad. You're not going to be good at math. And that's it. Another thing that I've noticed is that teaching at the secondary level for like 16 years, a lot of times regardless of the level, whether it's like an advanced class, a standard class, or like an essential level class, once students get to us, they have a predetermined math identity. Like by the time students hit ninth grade, oh, it's too late, right? They already come in. I'm good at math. I'm horrible at math. I don't like math. So they let those experience, early experiences define themselves, and then they carry that. And everything that happens is just like, Ruth, oh, see, like I'm not good at math because I don't understand multiplication. Oh, I don't understand division. I don't understand fractions. I don't understand. So it becomes this cycle that keeps feeding into, oh, math is not my thing. And also, even for students that are like good in math and like perform well in it, they don't always enjoy it. They do well in it and they're responsible, but you can see it, right? They're not always enjoying it to the point like where we can all enjoy it, right? Because it's not this thing that all it's only for the few people that get it. No, it shouldn't be like that.
Oh, so true. 100%. And you said a lot of really good things here, but I'm going to give you this one opportunity here as we look to wrap things up from this awesome conversation. And I'm going to ask you if there's just one thing, because you'd given people a lot of things to think about here, a lot of great ideas. But if there was just one thing that the listener could take with them from this conversation today, what do you hope the big takeaway will be for those listeners?
To give yourself an opportunity to make a mistake, right? Because I could say like, go try math play and maybe it's not going to work. So like, give yourself that grace to like make a mistake, try something, because everyone talks about the growth mindset, everyone, right? It's like everywhere. Like everyone talks about the growth mindset, but how many people do really want to try something like that? They don't know if it's going to work. Right? Because you don't want to take that risk. Like, I don't want to do that in front of my students. What if the administrators come in one day? My main message is try it. Be willing to try. A lot of times we ask our students to try things that they're not ready to do, or like we kind of push them. We should do that. We should be modeling that, right? Like try something. You don't know if it's going to work. I tell people that my secret, this is my secret, like top secret. When I'm about to try something that I don't know if it's going to work, I reach out to my administrators and I tell them, dear, you know, my supervisor, I'm going to be trying something new. I'm going to try this activity for the first time on Thursday at this time. Feel free to stop by. So in my mind, I'm good. Because if they come and it doesn't work, I did tell you in advance that I'm trying it for the first time. Now, that's what I do. And a lot of times, like most of the time, it goes well. But you have to be willing to try to take that step, because amazing things could happen. And you could connect with your students. I feel that whether you teach, like not just for math, but whatever we teach, part of our goal is to connect with our students, right? Beyond what we teach. I feel that through math play, I've been able to connect with my students at like a different level, because I've learned about them, because I've learned things from them, not only how to learn a tool or like things about them, things that they like, things that they're passionate about. Because if you think about mathematics, if you're just following the curriculum, there's not a lot of room for that. But once you start giving these opportunities to play and explore, then the students can open up and you can have like a different type of connection with them.
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
Love it. Love it. Thank you so much, Lebo. That is a great message. I think so much comes down to connections that we make with our students. And if this is one more thing that can help us make that connection with a student, then we can't not afford to take that risk and take that opportunity. Lebo, I want to thank you for joining us here on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Before we say our goodbyes, where can everyone who's listening right now learn more about you, your book, Math Play, and Math Play in general?
So I feel that the best two places are, number one, I'm pretty active on X, on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at MrValencia24. And the hashtag that I use all the time, anytime that I do a math play activity with my daughter, with my high school students, I do hashtag math play and I share it with the world. I also have a website, LeboValencia.com, where you could find links to the book, links to past presentations, my blog, even like a math play shirt if you want one for like casual Friday. So there's a lot in there. I have a YouTube channel also at Mr. Valencia 24, where I have some conferences about like math play and also some tutorials on different tech tools that I've used.
I love it. This has been awesome, my friend. We are so honored to have you here on the podcast finally in 2024. And hey, we're wishing you all the best as you start off the year on the right foot. And we look forward to staying in touch with you, my friend, and enjoy the play.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity to both present at this virtual summit to like have me. Like, I feel so honored. I almost feel like a super rock star hanging out with you guys. So thank you so much. I am so thankful and I appreciate what you're doing for the math community, like worldwide, because you guys are so international. So thank you so much. And please continue to do the work and anything that we can do to like help promote the joy of mathematics. We should all do.
Totally. Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Levo. Take care.
We appreciate you, my friend. Take care. Well, what an awesome episode and a great conversation there, John. We had been looking forward to chatting with Lebo for a while. We had the chance to check out his session from the 2023 Virtual Summit back in November 2023. That replay is up in the Academy. And actually, John, I think we've got a little coupon code for our friends.
We do.
If you head on over to makemathmoments.com/Academy, you can use the coupon Summit 30, and that will get you 30 days in the Academy to not only check out Lebo's session, but all of the virtual summit sessions and actually any of our Academy courses and problem-based units, 70 plus units in there. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/Academy and use that coupon code Summit 30, and hey, do it soon because we don't know how long that coupon code is going to be active for. So get on it, Summit 30, over at makemathmoments.com/Academy. But John, let's talk a little bit about our math classroom tree here. John, what areas, we have 6 parts of our math classroom. What parts of the tree were lighting up for you from this conversation with Lebo?
Yeah. And if you're not sure exactly on the 6 parts, we're not going to go into all 6 parts. I'm going to highlight one in particular from this episode, but you can head on over to growyourmathprogram.com. Watch our video on what are the 6 parts. It outlines those 6 parts. So head on over to growyourmathprogram.com. That you can also do our survey over there, and that can give you your free report. But in specifically this episode, I think when Lebo talks about math play, and it, for me, I think that's a fundamental belief and shift in your mindset as an educator. And I think even though he gave practical examples of like what this might look like in the classroom and how to kind of structure some things and think about how to make your classroom kind of the way that a math play lesson could look and feel, I think still it's a fundamental belief in a mindset shift in a teacher's mind to make this shift, to kind of say, I am going to engage my students in this way. I'm going to explore the joy of mathematics as my, almost like my why, like almost like how can I always be striving for math play and the joy of mathematics? Like I know he said every unit he's trying to figure out how can he engage his students in some sort of math play for that unit. But it's almost like if you could think about it a little bit more deeply, you can say like every time I'm doing a lesson, how do I bring out the joy of mathematics here? Or how do I bring out some element of play in this particular lesson? Because we want to be able to play with mathematics. We want to be able to explore mathematics. We want to be able to grapple. You had used that word, Kyle, you know, grapple with mathematics. So I think that's a fundamental shift. That's the soil, the water, the sunlight of our tree, that we need that soil and water and sunlight so that we can strengthen the roots of our tree and we can strengthen the limbs of our tree and the leaves of our tree. We need that in order to do a lot of the other things.
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to pick an area of the tree that I feel like we don't talk a ton about because I think both you and I know that this is an area that people spend a lot of time maybe overemphasizing. But in this case, I do want to bring it up and I am going to talk about the leaves. That's the resources. That's the supports that we have in order to run our program. And why I'm bringing it up is not because we're going to go run out and buy a curriculum necessarily that has all of these play elements in it already. But ultimately, why I want to bring up the leaves is because I want you to look at your leaves of your program, the resources that you're already using. And I want you to just think about, how do we just add those little tweaks? How do we add little pieces? We're not going to throw them all out. We're not going to rip off all the leaves and throw new leaves on our tree and just throw a new curriculum in here. There's great curriculum out there that can help you to do those things, including our problem-based units can help you along this journey. But you really want to start thinking about, what do I have now? What am I most comfortable with? And how do I use what I was planning to do tomorrow or next week or next month, whatever I was planning to do before you listen to this episode, what are the little pieces, those little elements that we can add in that can add in a little bit of that play, which can go a long way. So sometimes just adding something small can make a big difference in terms of the outcome. So that's what I'm going to have you think about. Sun, soil, and water, as you said there, John, mindset and belief is huge. And again, how do we take our resources that we're already using and start looking for ways that we can integrate a little bit more of this play?
We want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. And if you could, we want you to share this with a colleague. You know, send this episode to somebody in your school, somebody, you know, maybe it's the classroom next door, maybe it's in another building, but share this episode with someone you think that would get a lot of value from it. And that would be the one thing that you could do to help spread the word about the podcast, grow math joy in other buildings. So please do that. Spread the word. And if you haven't already, hit subscribe. And we will see you in the next episode. Kyle?
Well, until next time, my Math Moment Maker friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you. If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training, an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.